Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of August 15th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a lovely Sunday morning is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Is it a lovely morning? I'll take your word for it. I'm in a hotel room where I can, I'm looking down on the lobby.
You got the Olympic blues, it sounds like.
No, I got something. No, but I'm fine. It's been a kind of interesting time. I'm living vampire hours. You know, basically starting work when the sun goes down and then going to sleep when the sun comes up. So
I'm familiar with the vampire hours. I just don't want to see you living that way.
Well, yeah, it's living la vida loca, I suppose, in one way or another.
All right, well, let's get ready to ride. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Garrett Jones of the Giants, and we're going to talk about Yomiuri Ichiro and a whole bunch more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, first of all, let me apologize for the sound issues we had last week. It really couldn't be helped. And with the Olympics going on and our work schedules, we didn't have but a small window to record. So we appreciate your patience. And we'll probably need it again because we have some scratchy interviews for you this week. But I went out on Wednesday to Tokyo Dome and I sat down with Garrett Jones. He's a first-year import with the Yomiuri Giants. Now, we've seen a lot of guys fresh from the big leagues come to NPB and flop, and it looked like he was headed on that kind of a trail or a trajectory. He struggled early on, and we've seen it with the Giants. A lot of times they bring over some guys who have, you know, like I said, fresh out of Major League Baseball, which I remember Garrett Jones with the Pittsburgh Pirates most of all, but he did play for the Yankees a little bit. And he was sent to the farm on May 23rd, and it seemed to help him. He came back on June 10th, and the past 3 weeks before Saturday's games, he was hitting .333 with four home runs and 10 RBIs, and then he hit a home run on Saturday. He's got 14 of his 18 home runs against right-handed pitching, but average, split-wise, he's basically the same against both lefties and righties, not too much of a difference. And had his first four-hit game on Thursday, and I asked him about having some Asian in his bloodlines, and he said that that's not the case as far as he knows. So, Naija Gambare, that was for you, because she asked me about that a long time ago, and I said I didn't know, and I would ask him. So we went back in time in this interview. I think we taped it sometime in the 1970s. At least that's what it sounds like, so we apologize.
I think you're being generous.
It's the last time I used my iPhone 6 to record, but anyway, here's Garrett Jones.
Joining us this week is Garrett Jones of the second place, Yomiuri Giants. How are you doing? Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, so what was the reason behind your decision to come and play in Japan?
I think just the opportunity, chance to play, chance to experience a new country, new culture, and kind of new baseball realm, basically. So, you know, I was going to get a chance to play every day and compete, and it just seemed like the right move at the time, and you know, family was excited, you know, a little scared at first, but excited nonetheless, and you know, it's been a great experience so far.
How'd you end up with the Giants?
I have to ask my agent that one, I guess, but he was going and started talking to them, and they were pursuing me, I guess, and they've been watching me and had their eye on me, and you know, they call my agent. We started talking, so they flew down to Nashville where I live, and we met up, and we kind of got the ball rolling from there, and everything worked out.
All right, now this season has been a roller coaster. Obviously, you've had to spend time on the farm. You had the three-homer power show in Yokohama in June. What is it like for you?
Yeah, it's been a learning curve a little bit. I mean, a lot of different. It's a different game here. I mean, it's not. It's just different. It's different from the States. It's not better or worse. It's just different. And pitchers pitch differently. You know, they have a lot of deception. And you know, I think for me, it was a battle of trying to get my timing down and swing down. And I had to go down to the minors and kind of figure things out there. So, you know, I definitely think I made some good adjustments and, you know, got called back up and was ready to go. And, it's like I've been in the ball pretty well ever since then. So, yeah, it's definitely a learning curve the first few months. And, I'm glad I was able to make, you know, some better adjustments.
When you get told you're going to go down to the farm, what's your first reaction?
Well, I knew, at that point I was struggling, and, I had in the back of my head, it could send me down, and, And, you know, so this went down. It was kind of like, okay, you know, let's just stay positive this time wisely and use it to get back on track and not get down on yourself. And that's what I tried to do, just go down there and just really work on things and work on things in the game a little bit until I found, you know, what's going to become home when I can be consistent with.
Now, I always look at guys' careers in the States and maybe what the expectations would be here in Japan. What did the team tell you were the expectations for you as a hitter when they brought you over?
Well, you know, they wanted to definitely power RBIs and just be a threat in the lineup, basically. And, you know, they just wanted me to worry about hitting, and that was it. You know, just hit. So coming here, you know, I had some pressure on my shoulders to really, everyone thinks how you can hit 40 home runs, you know, but, hey, man, it's not that easy. It's definitely not. And, I think for me, it's just, you know, making that adjustment right now. And, but right now, I feel good. And, it definitely was a learning curve for me.
All right. Now, you guys as a team recently had your season high 7-game winning streak, and things seem to be going better. What has been the key to your success recently?
I think it's been a team effort. I mean, I think our hitting, our offense has definitely come along. We've had guys, Kinabe back from injury has been huge, and he's been swinging that well, and Sakamoto's been having a great year all year, and Murata, and now we got Cruz back. I mean, we got some guys swinging the bat well, and I think, you know, our offense has really exploded here as of late, and their pitching's been solid. Our starting pitching has been solid, and same with our bullpen. So, I mean, I think that's where, you got to have pitching, of course. I feel like to get, you know, playoffs and go on, and but our offense has definitely exploded and being able to score a lot more runs instead of, you know, 2-3 runs.
Right. Now, what's your impression of Abe? Because obviously he was one of the guys who was injured, and he spends time at first base as well, so that pushes you in the outfield.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great guy, great hitter. He's got a great, you know, knack for hitting, great approach, great swing. I mean, he's put up some huge numbers here, and you can see why. You know, he's got just a great hitter's approach, man. And it's, we've talked about hitting, and we have similar things go wrong. You know, when things go wrong with our swing, we're very similar. And, mm-hmm. Certain aspects. So, you know, we bounce ideas back and forth, talk about pitchers, and just, I like to see his approach, and sometimes they ask me questions. So it's nice to learn from a guy that's been here and put up huge numbers, and kind of similar hitters, left-handed power guys. So it's been great to do, you know, thinking with them.
That kind of leads into my next question. You have a rookie manager, and I'm just wondering how he comes across you, because do you end up talking to him more often, dealing with coaches or dealing with teammates?
I think, more teammates, you know. I think, you know, he's still, as he's coming off, just finished playing, you know, it's a big step to, you know, take control of the team, the guys he just played with, you know, he's now managing. So, he's talented, right? And, you know, he's very approachable and been able to talk to him about certain things, and he's been able to bounce things, you know, ideas off back at me. So I feel like we've got a great relationship, and, he's fresh out of playing, so he gets it, and he knows, you know, he was a lefty hitter as well, so we're able to communicate in that aspect very well.
All right, now what's the preparation like with this team?
Like before a game?
Yeah, in general, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, heard there's a lot of meetings, and you guys a lot of details.
Yeah, we have our hitters meetings, and they're short meetings, you know, no big deal, but we have our little hitters meetings, and kind of talk about what we want to do, and you know, I talked about if we need to get back on the right track, just a little pep talk here and there, and we do our thing, go through BP and do our infields, and it's like every other team. So I mean, we have a few meetings here and there, but nothing big, and you know, it doesn't make the day long or anything. So.
Okay. Now, how do you see the other teams in the Central League? This looks like it's going to be a close race all the way down to the end.
It is. I mean, it's competitive. Right now, you can't really afford to lose many games. We're right there, and we're right there with the Cubs. I think, you know, we play them, I think, 7 or 8 more times still. And it's going to be interesting. It's going to come down to those last two games, I think. Each game counts. So, you got the Bay Stars right there. You got Tigers, Lyman. You got your team's just, you know, can turn the gear, and things can happen quickly.
All right, well, we'll be watching you guys. Good luck.
All right.
Stay healthy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, we appreciate the time.
Well, that was good hearing you, buddy.
Yeah, thank you very much, Gary. Really nice guy, really friendly, good to talk to, although we had to kind of rush it because his interpreter was telling him he had another something or other to do. It wasn't a meeting.
No,
it wasn't one of those famous Giants meetings,
first.
But he had something to do. So, yeah, what stayed with you after the interview?
Well, quite a lot. I think, you know, obviously, I guess I liked the expression where he said, oh, you know, we were excited to come to Japan. Really scared, but excited.
Right.
Yeah, that's the family thing, and all. That's kind of a long story to go into. I've been talking with a lot of scouts and people recently, so talking about the guys making that transition. And so, yeah, I mean, he and I talked about this before the start of the season, and a lot of the players do. And, you know, and it's exactly a learning curve, and it's really hard to get right the first time out of the chute.
I don't
think anybody does. Or if they do, they sort of get locked in and adjusted against, and then they spend the rest of their time in Japan wondering what went wrong because it was all working so well.
Right.
And they don't, you know, move forward from there. So he was, I guess, pretty typical in the sense that, you know, he got a little bit of a start, a little bit of a stop, a little bit of a start. Okay. It was one step forward, two steps back.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what I liked was, you know, I guess a lot of it was typical, you know, they're doing things differently. I have to make an adjustment. But what he said, I thought was so simple, but, you know, he said, I got to use, you know, I'm going down. You know, I don't have a choice in the matter. He didn't say that, but he didn't have a choice.
Right, yeah.
He didn't have a choice in the matter.
But his choice, sent to the farm. Yeah.
Right, but his choice was what to do when you get there. Now, which was use the time wisely. You know, so obviously what he wasn't doing on the farm was spending all his time on video games.
Video games, okay.
So anyway, yeah, I thought that was interesting. And the other one was mentioning, you know, when you asked him about the Giants, I guess two things, which I'll get to and just touch on and let you go, is one is talking about Shinnosuke Abe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is pretty rare in my experience, that a foreign player will come over here and say, well, they'll say, oh, Abe has a great swing and he does this and he does that. But everybody really has to deal with their own swing.
Mm-hmm.
And the own peculiar problems they're having adjusting to the Japanese game. But when he said, we talk about his approach, we talk about, you know, what people are doing and when it doesn't work and when it does work, to me, that was different. I don't hear that very often.
Hmm.
So I thought
okay.
That was kind of interesting. And the other thing before I go here is that I love the question about Yoshinobu Takahashi. Because I have, when he was a player, I pretty much had zero understanding about what made him tick.
Right.
He was just a star. He was a player who was a big success right out of the box. And then his career kind of fossilized after the second season, and it went downhill for about 15 years.
Right.
And so I don't really have a good clue about what he is or who he does or whether he thinks about anything other than, you know, should I crash into the wall or shouldn't I?
Right. Should I dive for this ball or should I not? Yeah.
Yeah, should I? Yeah. Okay. So, or whether he thought anything at all. So it was interesting to hear, you know, a player's perspective of Yoshinobu the manager. So I really enjoyed that question.
Yeah, I you know, I've thought about it a lot. I have seen Yoshinobu a few times at Tokyo Dome, and I said, hey, man, you guys are doing well. And he said, hey, we're surviving. And it's a question I had asked Scott about, and Scott Matheson, and you know, anyone, how do you communicate with this manager? How is his relationship with you? Because we've seen a lot of times, especially with the foreign players, hey, you hit the ball and then we'll talk to you later. You know, mm-hmm. We won't even talk to you at all. Just hit home runs. And I really wanted to know if there was some kind of relationship growing there. But I really like Garrett's knowledge of the guys on the team. Mm. You know, to hear him talk about Yoshinobu and his history,
mm-hmm.
and how he knows about that. Obviously, he heard that Yoshinobu was playing up until last year, and now he's suddenly the manager, and
mm-hmm.
probably a guy who probably still wanted to continue his career. I'm sure he's heard all that.
Mm.
And then for him to hear, to know about Abe's prowess as a hitter as well, mm-hmm. is just very impressive that the team, A, informed him of all that, or B, maybe he did his homework on some of these guys, and mm-hmm. he's looked at the stats and all that stuff. So I thought actually, though, that Takahashi might have more to say to him, because I thought they were similar, not in their swings or anything, but they're left-handed batters who can hit with power, and they can both find gaps. And I thought, you know, the first thing that Yoshinobu would do is pull him aside and say, here's how you can be very productive in Japan, and here's a good approach for you. And I just kind of expected the relationship to be a little bit tighter. So maybe we didn't get the full breadth of what their relationship is in this interview, but I would just assume that they were I was just assuming that Yoshinobu was talking to him a little bit more and giving him a little bit more information and just staying in his ear in terms of advice and talking about hitting and pitching and the Japanese approach and all that stuff. But, you know, Garrett's really come on since, I mean, not really come on, but he's
Come on is I think accurate.
Yeah, since coming back from the minor league stint. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that stuck out for me in this interview is we've heard from a lot of guys in recent years doing these interviews.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard them all say, hey, you know, I wanted to come to Japan, or Japan was on the radar, mm-hmm. or I always thought of Japan as an option at some point in my career, and that just wasn't the case at all for Garrett. You know, it just sounded like he woke up one day and his agent said, hey, how about Japan? And I'm not saying it's bad. It's just a different way of how he ended up here.
I think it was more of a different response to the question, because when we talked about it, Japan was on the radar, and he did have people encouraging him to go. I think what happened was it suddenly became an option that he didn't expect.
Right.
I know he was encouraged to come here by a couple of people who had played in Japan, one of his coaches who had played in Japan a long time ago for the Hiroshima Carp, and who shares a name with him. I can't remember which Garrett it was. There were both two Garretts who played here, and one of them, Smokey, and Smokey was his coach, who said, you ought to go play in Japan.
Hmm, okay. All right, well, let's talk about the Giants a little bit. Abe recently had the longest streak of his career, as far as I could tell, 23 games, and Hayato Sakamoto is headed toward his first CL batting title, and I don't think putting Hisayoshi Chono in the leadoff spot was a great move by any means, but it seems to be working for the team in some respects.
Yeah, why not? You know, if he's, as long as he doesn't pout and sulk, it's a good move.
Well, I remember you talking about the fact that he was placed in Yoshinobu was placed himself in the leadoff spot.
Mm.
It made him try to show that he wasn't a leadoff hitter. And so I guess he knows all about putting a guy who's basically a power hitter in the leadoff spot. So it made sense to him, I guess.
Well, Chono's such a versatile guy. You know,
yes,
I think he takes a lot of pride in being able to do everything. You know, he plays the outfield well. He throws well. He runs the bases well. He can get on base. He can hit for power. So I think for me, he's a great guy to have batting first. I don't have any problems with it.
No, I don't think it was a bad move, so to speak. And obviously, the team went on a 7-game winning streak recently. And then,
so what? I'm curious. What surprised you about it then?
I think what surprised me is that they would put a guy who's basically supposed to be a power hitter in that role.
But he really never has.
But
been
he a, hasn't been.
He yeah, hasn't he been hasn't a big been. Power hitter, right?
Right, right, and so. What's the message to him? I mean, you remember I talk about when every move there's a message to the player and all that stuff.
Oh, of course.
What's the message to him?
Even if there isn't a message, there's always a message received, whether there's one intended or not.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, obviously they have been winning a lot of games recently. They had, the 7-game winning streak that was a season long, and then they lost one, and then they had another little winning streak that was broken last night on Saturday. So they are putting it together. I'm not sure if they can finish off this run. I mean, they had the good stretch, and then against the Hiroshima Carp, they were one out away. I think it was Sunday night, so we didn't talk about that game, but it was Sunday night a week ago that they were one out away from a sweep, and then Kikuchi hits a home run, and they end up, the Carp end up coming back, and we were staring at a very, very close race, and now it's back to 6.5 games as we go into Sunday's play. So, you know, I kept saying, who's going to finish in second place? Are the Bay Stars going to be able to make a run? Are the Giants going to be able to stay there? And someone said, hey, the Tigers are coming hard, and they are. They just, it's just so many, in my opinion, so difficult to win game consecutive games, especially when you don't generate consistent offense.
Well, that's I actually think the Giants' offense, I mean, right now, at this instant, is probably as good as it's been. It's probably better than it's been in about 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, yes, definitely.
But, yeah, it is hard. I mean, none of the teams are really bad. That's the thing. I mean, as bad as they play sometimes, and I think certainly there'll be teams that have stretches where their pitching isn't working. You know, that's happened a lot with the Dragons, with everybody, but primarily with the Dragons and the Swallows, and on occasion the Tigers.
Yes.
But so you can hit one of those stretches and win a bunch of, you know, pick up a lot of easy wins because, you know, they're giving you 4 runs a game. But it is hard. It is hard to, you know, it's hard to repeat those. You don't get to choose who's gonna pitch against you.
You're right. Right. But they've been playing well, and I wouldn't – they're going to have their chances, I think, to make up some more ground and make it close. And the Carp are going to have to win this thing. It's not going to be a case where all the teams say, well, the Carp are just too good. We're going to let them go ahead and finish off and win a Central League title. Because every game is so important from first place to last place right now, maybe with the exception of the Dragons, who are really starting to fade fast. But they still think they're in it, and they're going to play you tough. So it's going to be interesting to watch all of September.
Well, you know, remember, I don't know if you remember when we talked about the Central League picks, and I mentioned mine, and my formula had the Carp edging the Giants in a fairly tight pennant race.
And right.
Then I flipped them. I picked the Giants because what the Giants do is they tend to outperform their projections. And I think a lot of that is usually teams, when they get down, they tend to get down on themselves in the standings. You know, they start to lose, and, you know, they give away at bats. They give away either pitching or hitting or even fielding games that they're out of. They give up on early. The Giants really, if you do that, I mean, they do that. They're human. The Giants players are human, but as a team, the expectations are that they're going to be back in the pennant race. Yeah, I think the Giants are a team that, you know, if they have any chance of winning, they're going to be dangerous in the pennant race because...
Definitely. And in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean... They're usually, as I said, they're human, and they can be outplayed as easily as everybody else. But they're never going to they're going to give up less is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
So
and Chono, I think the past 2 weeks is hitting .333. So again, that's before Sunday, but .333 is a pretty good clip. So
wow, .333 for a couple of weeks ain't a good clip. You know, .400 for a couple, .450 for a couple of weeks is a good clip.
I don't think he's been hitting .333 for any 2 week stretch this season. So it's improved for him. So
well, you know, in the all newspapers, right, if you hit .333 for the Giants for a week, you're an all star. So. or a pinch runner, whichever comes first.
Hashtag.
All right, let's make
that joke will never go away.
No, it will not. It's the one that just keeps running.
Ooh, very good.
All right, let's make a complete four-seam transition and talk about Ichiro Suzuki.
Another Suzuki who can run.
When we put out our podcast a week ago, he got his hit as I was doing the final edits to the show and getting it uploaded. And he got hit 3,000 in the major leagues. He tripled in Denver. And I was watching the game, and I noticed he did his little Ichiro skip when he cracks a ball really well, and it went off the
right.
wall. I actually thought the ball could have been caught, but that's beside the point.
Well, it could, yeah, a little, just a hair more of a better jump or a better time to jump or a better start. Yeah, he was about 3 or 4 inches from catching that ball. So
yeah, yeah. And so it was great for him. It was a great moment. And I thought it was really interesting that D. Gordon was the first player to hug him on the field there. And he got popped for doping this year. And the last player to hug him before play resumed was Barry Bonds. I thought that was really interesting because here's a very clean player. And everybody talks about his work, Ichiro's work ethic and how much he stretches. And I thought that was just kind of an interesting fact.
Right. And so basically that works until they bust Ichiro for, you know, performance enhancing drugs, you know, so
we
really don't know, you know, anybody who hasn't been busted, we don't know. And, I had somebody say to me that, wonder if Barry Bonds actually used, performance enhancing drugs, and he said, look, it's never been proven, there's been this and there's been that, and he's been in court and so on and so forth, and his point is valid. It's never been proven. And the other thing is that most of the time he was playing, it wasn't even against MLB rules.
Right.
So it's kind of a murky situation. But I was wondering why people thought, I heard somebody else say it's fitting that D. Gordon reached out, was the first one to get there, and it didn't have nothing to do with drugs. It had to do with the fact that he was a former batting champion when apparently he tested positive for steroids.
Right. Okay, so we have some comments. I'm going to play them here. It's about 3 minutes of Lou Piniella talking about Ichiro, and it's followed by Warren Cromartie, the former Yomiuri star, whom Ichiro probably at the time was a young man honing his skills. He probably saw Cromartie play during his time in MPB with the Giants. First is Lou, and then Crow, who sat down with me on Tuesday. Tuesday morning, actually, we got a chance to talk. So here's what they had to say.
He basically coached himself in the fact that his exercise routine was almost legendary, and he was a great example for the rest of our players. Listen, the way he hit, you can't teach. I don't think you'll see anybody else in the history of baseball that is running to first base the way he hits the ball. But he stays over the top over the plate with his upper body so well that he makes really, really good contact. And he's slowed down now, but he still has the experience and he knows how to get it done. And to think that in that first year that this young man would be playing at age 42 going for 3,000 hits, I didn't think it was possible then. 2,000 hits would have been, just an outstanding achievement. And, I'm so happy for him. I really am. He's a wonderful, wonderful young man. He's a great ambassador for the game of baseball, and I'm happy.
Yeah, Lou, he had a couple of, subpar years, the last one with the Yankees and his first with the Marlins, and people were saying, well, you know, is Ichiro done? But obviously, what were you thinking when you saw those numbers, when you saw that performance? What were your thoughts?
First of all, let me tell you, very few players play past the age of 35, 36. That's really the cutoff point.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have players playing older, it becomes extremely difficult. Now, I played till I was 41, but basically by the time I was 36 or 37, I was no longer an everyday player.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult. It really is. I mean, the pitchers are getting younger and stronger, throwing harder, and the body is getting a little older.
Mm.
So it did surprise me that he couldn't keep up the pace that he brought with him from Japan as far as production was concerned. Every player slows down. You look at all the great players in baseball and that played this game for a long, long time, and you lose that bat speed.
Mm.
Your mind is as sharp as ever, but the body doesn't react the same.
Mm.
It didn't surprise me, no. But listen, he's hung around there, and he's had just a marvelous career, and you know he's well liked. He's been a tremendous ambassador for the game, and it's a really, really good story.
Ichiro, you spoke about him just a few moments ago. Now he would have been a teen when you were playing over here, so you probably saw you playing.
Let me just say this about Ichiro, man. I'm very proud of Ichiro. I remember me playing, and I heard a little thing about him, how he was a little rebel. He was going against the grain a little bit, wearing the baggy pants, and wanted to wear the suits and ties like the other teammates, and that type of thing. Was into hip hop and that type of thing early on.
Was he now? Yeah.
Yeah, and then I think more than anything, his mindset was already over in the States. That made him, I think that's the edge that he had. You know, he wasn't, you know, it's not good to go against the grain here in Japan. So he did it and got crap for it, but he stuck by it. So I think that edge prepared him to what he's doing over in the majors. And, man, I got to tell you, I have him in my backyard, which is in Miami, where I'm from, and what I did over here in his backyard. So I get asked a lot of questions about Japanese baseball, and they talk to me about Japanese baseball, and why Ichiro this, why Ichiro that, and I give them a little perspective of it, but it's a tremendous thing. I think Japan ought to be very, very proud of what he's done. I mean, he's always in the major leagues. He respects the game, tremendously respects the game, especially the Major League Baseball. He's going to give everything he owns, he said the other day, to Major League Baseball. Before he goes to the Hall of Fame, he used to visit the Hall of Fame during the off season.
Right.
Kept it on the download, and he's a true player. What it really should be about in today's game, it's a lost entity as far as the focus and appreciation of the game, day in and day out. You don't see him throwing down helmets, throwing his bats, cracking his bat over his legs, that type of thing. So I'm very proud of him, and I think Japan's going to really have to do something with him for him at the end of the season. And I tell you what, when he goes to the Hall of Fame, I don't think the Hall of Fame is ever going to see a media conglomerate when he goes in Cooperstown, New York. When he goes to the Hall, it's going to be an absolute, absolute madhouse. So it'll be one of a kind type thing. He's up there with the immortals, man. Babe Ruth and everybody else. This plaque's going to be on the wall. So I'm very proud of him. Very, very proud.
All right, great things from these guys. So I hope you enjoyed that. A little bit scratchy, a little bit noisy in the background. So apologies again.
Certainly, the Lou Piniella was. They actually did have the download available, but for some reason, it's one of those things that's, you know, they say they're available. You click on them to download, and it doesn't do nothing. You know, it's sort of like eye candy. You know, you can see it, but you can't touch it. So
yeah, that's sort of like me after about midnight.
Okay, John Gibson eye candy. That's the first thing. That's the first thing I thought about, bro. Okay.
Well, I did want to say that I watched Ichiro's press conference in Japanese, and that was without the interpreter, and it had a slightly different line of questioning than the mainstream and the U.S. stuff. And it's still available on YouTube if you guys who can speak Japanese want to check it out. So I highly recommend it. But there were a couple things that I took away from it. And one was his eyes were watering up.
Mm.
Now, nothing spills out. There was no leakage. But it's as emotional as I've ever seen Ichiro. And the only other time I remember him being really emotional, he was just upset. And that was in after a WBC loss.
I remember a few of those.
Japan lost to South Korea, yeah. And he thought the team didn't have a chance to advance, and they were just really upset. And that was the only other time I've seen a lot of emotion from him in an interview.
Well, he put a lot on his shoulders, you know, in those things. I think he put more than he could handle. And in the WBC talking about that, so that's certainly understandable. I know I missed both of the press conferences because I was, as I said, I was in vampire mode and sleeping, you know, as long as the sun was out. And and actually, I was at the office waiting for Ichiro to get the hit, and I sat through his first at bats, and then he got it as soon as I left the building. You know, it's like, take that, Bozo. No more stupid questions from you.
Yeah.
But I thought the interesting thing, now I'd heard the Lou Piniella, and I do want to apologize for the quality of that. That was basically me holding me holding my iPhone close to the earpiece while we conducted a group call.
Right. And I mean, you can hear him. Right. It's just a struggle, but you can hear.
Right. And then Cromartie is interesting, and I think the most interesting for me is that Warren saying it was essentially the hip hop.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, I will skip over that, but I think he was always, Ichiro has always had the thing. Now here's the thing, but the element of that which I thought really interesting is Ichiro in one way reminds me a little bit of Alex Ramirez. And what I mean by that is when Ichiro was here, he stood out there was a movie some years back where everybody lived in a black and white world, but these people came from a color world.
Oh, I don't remember the movie.
Okay, and the point was everybody was in black and white except a couple of characters, and they were in color. And that's how Ichiro used to be. He was the only player, he was the only Japanese player who was in color in a black and white game. And he stood out like that, and he thrived on that. His game was, he had all this, not hot dogging because he had the game, but he was a show-off. He was a show-off when he was in Japan. And then he goes to the majors, and basically he's a show-off with his teammates. You know, he keeps that sort of, he keeps a lid on that. And I guess a lot of people aren't familiar with it, but he's basically considered a stoic player. You know, he plays the game the right way. This isn't the guy, you know, if they saw, you know, if these people saw him playing in Japan 20 years ago, they would say, that's not playing the game the right way. You don't do that. You know, they would have ripped into him for not playing, but, you know, he knows where he is. And the reason I brought up Alex Ramirez is because a number of foreign players have said about Alex Ramirez and his home run dancing and his playing up to the fans and his rapport with the fans on as an entertainer rubbed them the wrong way, and they'd say, look, you don't do that at home, don't do it here. And Alex's famous response was, look around you, where are you?
Yeah.
You're not back home anymore.
Yep.
And Ichiro's,
Dorothy.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And Ichiro Suzuki is being what he needs to be in America. And actually, I'm curious as whether he would like to sort of get beyond that and be the guy who would play catch with the fans, you know, while waiting for his manager to argue a call. You know, they get the warm-up balls, and his teammates would be playing catch, and he'd be throwing it back and forth with the fans when they were in a game at Tokyo Dome, and sneak onto the mound while his manager was arguing, and throw warm-up pitches, and also when they're warming up before the start of the inning, and he's in right field, he would make his throws all the way over to left field. and catch the balls behind his back from the center fielder.
You know, right.
He'd do all this. Yeah, this was his
hot dogging. Yeah.
Yeah. But in America, he's the guy who doesn't talk too much. He doesn't do too much, except for his sort of his famous all-star pregame speeches, which were profanity laced and needed to be deleted for family consumption.
Wow. Well, in his press, that presser that I was referring to, the one in Japanese, he said a couple things, and it was very, very PG.
Yeah.
He said one thing is that someone asked him about you know, having these milestones and his reaction to them, and he says, well, he likes to savor every little achievement instead of just passing over them like, you know, brushing past them like little milestones.
Mm.
He likes to savor them, and he uses them as motivation. You know, okay, I like the way this feels. It makes me want to do more.
Mm.
And he also admitted that the little slump that he had before getting the 3,000th hit, which I think was a 9 or 10 day event, he said he didn't want to be around other people at the time.
Mm.
He really understood the difficulty in his role as a pinch hitter, and then he didn't want to be around people. He started to, he usually takes his emotions out of play when he's on the field. You know, there's no emotion in it. And he really just didn't want to be around people, didn't want to talk to anybody during that time. Because he was kind of in a slump, and he finally got that hit, and so it was just, you know, it was interesting to see the different side for him. But I think the season as a fourth outfielder for him has actually been pretty fantastic if you think about it, because that's a talented outfield. He shouldn't really even be getting as much playing time as he is, although the role as a pinch hitter, I don't see, sometimes they just throw him up there. I don't see the rhyme or reason all the time. I think it's just a case of they've guaranteed him a certain number of at bats, so they just throw him up there.
It's part of a plan. I don't think it's a matter of guaranteeing his at bats, because there are games when I think they're saving him for a certain purpose, and that
and situation
never comes,
right.
And that situation right. never comes, and he doesn't get into games. But basically, Mattingly has said, I want to use him every single game because I want him to stay sharp. That's the role he has. And I think part of that is, you know, keeping him as involved as possible. I think that's the plan. So,
okay.
The other thing I guess I wanted to mention was, I mean, you were saying, you know, that the great outfielder he is, has been, and of course, in when I talked to Lou Piniella, he was he's like many people, an apologist for Ichiro Suzuki. Now, Ichiro Suzuki is what he is, good and bad. You know, there's precious little bad about him. But the part of it is that one of the things that his apologists say, and Lou Piniella said when I asked him, was Lou Piniella said, contact hitters don't draw walks.
Right.
Okay. Well, let's just skip over that. But one of the other things that his apologists say is Ichiro was a good on-base percentage guy.
Mm.
Which is, you know, it's like calling Donald Trump a measured and reasonable public speaker.
Hashtag.
it's just so far removed from the truth. He does get on base more than a lot of people, but here's a guy who is a two-time batting champion, and his averages are always in the, you know, top 10 in the league when he was a regular,
right?
And his on-base percentages were, I think, only twice in the top 10, the two times he finished with the batting championship. This year, I don't know what the motivation is, but I'm guessing he's actually decided that he can play until he's 50, or at least he can give it a shot. And if he's going to play till 50, he better get on base more than his career, which is about 320.
Right.
Which is not what you really want from your fourth outfielder. It's what you want from your, you know, it's what you want from your shortstop if he's not a real good hitter. So
okay.
Now he's getting walks and he's keeping his average up, and he's sort of doing the synergy, this whole thing that he disdained, you know, as not being worthy of him for years. And if he does this, if he keeps, you know, if he keeps getting on base at 358, or I know he's basically leading the Marlins in on base percentage. If he does that, then he's a very valuable fourth outfielder. If he goes back to being Ichiro Suzuki, you know, the hit king, with a 300 average and a 310 on base percentage, you know, he'd have to be Superman in the outfield for you to want to play him.
Right. Okay. And the last thing I wanted to touch on before we move on is that I love what Warren Cromartie said about the Hall of Fame and how the press is going to descend on to the Hall of Fame. But and when he said that, I wondered immediately, I wonder if Ichiro is finally going to make a speech in English when he's inducted into the Hall of Fame. That would be interesting.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. All right, making a seamless transition, let's talk about the Chunichi Dragons and manager Motonobu Tanishige being bounced out on his butt. And this was kind of, you know, it kind of was a surprise. I think the timing, you know, they had been in last place. Gosh, I don't even know where to start. The bench coach, Shige Kazumori, slides over into the driver's seat. There were a few other changes. Takahiro Saiki, a guy I really like. He was the defensive coach. He was also bounced out because he and Shige were buddies, so they both got sent away. Yep. Now, the shock for me was the timing, because I guess this has been brewing for a while. From what I gathered, the team is basically unhappy with the results on the field, obviously, but they're unhappy with Hiromitsu Ochiai as the GM.
The team is unhappy with him.
That's what I've heard. And he's the one, if you notice the reports, you know, he was scrambling, he went to the farm team and he was there to talk to look over the players and talk to a lot of people think is going to be the manager. Right now, Mori is the interim, but they think Michihiro Ogasawara is just primed and ready now to be the first team manager. So he went there to talk to him. I heard that what has been happening is Ochiai has been giving directives and Tanishige has either been not listening to them or upset because he doesn't have a say in how to run things. And even in his press conference, it was very emotionless. I don't know if you got to see any of his presser.
Nope.
And he was, you know, basically, thank you very much. I enjoyed my time here. And, you know, he said my 14 and a half years with the Dragons has been blah, blah, blah. And there was no emotion behind it at all. I would expect to see something, maybe some anger or some sorrow, something. But he was basically just delivering the lines.
Well, you know, he does, you know, it comes with the territory.
In that,
if you lose, your job is on the line. And I think in the bottom line, of course, that's what he said, you know, in this, this is the world we live in. And if you fail, you know, this is what you can expect. And I think he knew that, but of course, I think you're right. Again, Tsuyoshi had Yakubaka had picked up on one Japanese article, which I did read, which said, yeah, essentially that he was, he had no say about his coaching staff, except for Takahiro Saiki, who was a base star who ended his career with the Dragons.
Right.
And interestingly enough, he's the guy who got fired. Now, it is interesting, but obviously the team ain't working things. But if the team's unhappy with Ochiai, then what difference does it make who Ochiai thinks is going to be the next manager?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I asked one of the, you know, I asked a couple of beat reporters and a friend of mine who knows about the Dragons pretty well, and he said, the idea of this GM, I think it started in Japan. It's only been in recent years, maybe the past 25 or so years that they've had GMs, and their role is somewhat still undefined and team by team.
Yep,
it's not like it is in the States, so. No. The GM role is very vague and it's a murky world. And because the team seems to be upset with Ochiai, they didn't fire him because I think it's Takao Sasaki, the guy who made the, I think he's the team president, and he's the one who made the announcement at the press conference that they were asking Shige to take some time off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, code word, get pack your bags and get the hell out.
Yeah, so clean up when you go. Everything you leave is going to be thrown away.
Right, and so this notion of the GM, when it should be the whole team working together to build a roster, you know, the roster construction has to be in line.
Mm.
Everyone has to have the same philosophies, and that doesn't seem to be the case. Ochai has been telling Shige what to do a lot of the times, and he hasn't been very obedient, is what one of my friends told me. He hasn't been obeying.
Okay.
The exact word. So, you look at the roster construction. I've been having a debate with the Coaster Freak all season that he says that this is not a last place team. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. We saw the team play well early, but it's certainly the pitching leaves a lot to be desired. I won't say it's last place level, but the pitching leaves a lot to be desired. The team that's on the field doesn't have a lot of speed. There's only one or two guys who steal bases or who are allowed to steal bases. I don't know that the philosophy is let's not hit and run, let's only bunt. But, you know, we don't see guys being aggressive on the bases.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to blame on Tanishige or what to blame on the philosophy of the team. It's very hard. It's very hard to gather. But
well, if Tanishige is the manager and he's given a team to work with, and he doesn't act the way he thinks it's in his best interests, then he essentially deserves to be fired. You know, that's harsh.
And that I agree with, but
because
I don't think
he's got to be essentially insubordinate. You know, if they're going to fire me, if they're going to fire you, you might as well get fired for doing the right thing. If that makes
you mean
any
the
sense.
Right thing, the right
by,
thing
by
mean,
what he thinks is the right thing by doing. But
what he,
but again, so, the other issue is it's really hard when the team wants to go one way and you want to go another, and the rules are vague. I find everything about Ochai is difficult because he was a great, great manager. He was a brilliant manager for the Dragons. And they essentially fired him because he wasn't fan friendly,
right?
Which is about the lamest thing you could possibly think of. You know, okay, let's build. Why don't we build an organization that's fan friendly and let the manager do what he does? No, the manager's got to be Bobby Valentine. You know.
Or Kiyoshi Nakahata.
Yeah, somebody, yeah, a little, you know, who's somebody who's got some pizzazz out there, and his job was, pizzazz, go put that where it will do the most good.
Yeah, well, the losing was hurting. They had lost 8 consecutive series. Then they lost that series to the Swallows after taking the first game, and I think they've already lost the series to the Tigers because they've lost the first 2 in that series. So, you know, they're just heading. I mean, it's not like Tanishige was out there doing something much different from any other typical Japanese manager. So I don't think he was given enough talent on the roster to have expectations of a championship.
Well, that's what
so
he
why
said.
Are you firing?
Yeah, well, that's what that was 2 of the things. And I think it's interesting is that he does manage differently from other managers in the sense that he probably bunts more than anybody in the Central League. He's like a Pacific League manager, so much he likes his bunting. The other thing is that what he did say at the press conference was, you know, this is what I had to work with, so what do you expect? There was a little jab at the team construction as if I didn't have nothing to do with this.
I fully agree.
And I think, you know, and I saw a couple of things like Iwase pitching out, you know, being out there pitching, and I wonder if almost the last straw wasn't putting Iwase out there to embarrass himself. And I'm guessing Iwase wasn't a guy that Tanishige wanted on his team.
Right.
That's
not
just
anymore.
That's 100% baseless, groundless, uninformed speculation. So you can take that for what it's worth.
I actually will give it some merit because it was strange that I think I saw some people on Twitter, you know, I said Iwase is in a game. I think it was Jason Koskri of the Japan Times. Iwase is in a game, and I'm like, yeah, meaningful one. What the heck's going on out here? So I think we should have seen it coming. It shouldn't have been as a surprise as it was,
right,
actually, for me. But, yeah, I kept thinking, with this roster construction, okay, what are your expectations? You're basically in a similar boat with the Hanshin Tigers. You want to put some new faces out there, see how they play, see if they can develop, see what you have. Unfortunately, Endo, the very fast infielder, got injured early on, so we haven't seen as much of him, I think, as they want to. But then we've got Morty putting, I don't know how long it was in the game last night, but he had Shuhei Takahashi playing second base, and he's just not a fast guy. I don't know what kind of construction you want to put together in the lineup to, or what you have to move around to end up putting him at second base. But, they've really fallen off the cliff in the second half. And obviously, Shuhei Takahashi's injury played a part of a role in it. But here's the thing is, I just don't think firing the manager in the middle of the season has anything, produces anything good. And in recent years, we've seen some managers get bumped in season, and it really hasn't worked out for the teams involved. Seibu, Haruki Ihara, decided to step away, and I think the team did okay.
Yeah, they played quite well, actually.
But now you look in the past 2-3 seasons, that they haven't been doing well. I don't even think they've been living up to expectations.
That's because they decided, if we keep the guy, and here's the thing, if we keep the guy who's the interim manager, it means we have to do less work.
Right.
Now, that's a harsh thing to say, but I think it's sort of a, well, let's say he was kind of okay, so maybe he'll continue to be kind of okay.
Right.
But I've heard, but these are the same people who made the decision to hire Ihara.
Right.
Okay.
And then 2012, it was Akinobu Okada of Oryx walked away, and Hiroshi Moriwaki took over. And then he hit the eject button last year, and it was Junichi Fukuda who took over. And of course, it's Oryx, so
they
have a history of this.
Oryx makes Junichi look like a kind of a sane operation.
Hashtag high heat.
And what I heard is, something I've talked about this with a few people in the last couple of weeks, and Oryx's situation is really different. And I really want to, my heartfelt condolences to anybody who likes Oryx, and John and I and everybody around. There are so many really good talented players and so many good talented people who work for Oryx. But the fact is, they've got two front office executives who spend basically most of their time trying to get the other one fired.
Fired, yeah.
And
I remember you talking about
that. They've got, basically the team is constructed along parallel chains of command. One guy runs, has his troops, and the other guy has his troops, and...
And they battle.
Well, they don't battle, but it's sort of like, they're playing a game of Othello or something, where they're trying to fill their spots with their guys who are loyal to them, and then fire the guys who are loyal to the other guy, or get them demoted, or get them transferred. So it's all about control, and it's very little. It has zero to do with baseball. And people come, players come to Oryx, and they get they basically get messed up. So it's a bad situation. But yeah, compared to that, Junichi were essentially there. Although Junichi obviously had an issue when they had a manager who is saying he wasn't allowed to actually manage. And that kind of issue is interesting, but it's not, certainly not unique to Junichi.
Right. Yeah, and it was Ihara was in 2014.
Okay.
So that's recent history, and Norio Tanabe took over, and he's pretty much on the way out. So I just don't think it lends any stability. And I had a Twitter discussion, let's put it, with the NPB Reddit guy, and he wanted to fire Shingo Takatsu because the collection of pitching with the Swallows wasn't performing. And I'm thinking, well, why fire a really good pitching coach because you have really bad talent? It just doesn't make sense. Why, you know, you're not solving the problem. And I think this is a similar situation. You can fire Shige, but the team is not going to get any better. Mm-hmm. And I just don't. And you know, he was a player manager. They finished fourth his first year. They finished fifth last year, and I thought they were overachieved then. And they're in last place, and it looks like they're headed for a last place finish this year. So the decline is obvious, but I don't know that it's the manager's fault. I did talk to Wayne Grosick, and he said, "Look, they're digging in the same talent pool. Basically, they're only sticking with Dominican players, but basically not completely, but Dominican Latin players. Other than Matt Clark and Drew Naylor, they really haven't gone after." Guys who have, you know, who have been stateside. They're basically Latin guys.
Well, yeah, because that was part of the formula. I think there are two things that were part of the Dragons' formula when Hiromitsu Ochiai, I think, aside from his ability to spot players' skills and get and manipulate the players into developing those skills that he saw, you know, and having a team vision, which he may not have shared with a lot of people. The other two part components to the Dragon's success, in addition to the Japanese side, was Shige Kazumori's Dominican connection. While Ochiai was the manager, essentially all their foreign talent was Dominican or Latin. These were people that Mori essentially scouted in the Dominican Republic Winter League.
Right. He's hitting on players being useful. I just don't know that they're championship caliber.
Right. But getting good players and players with Dominican connection, and that was one part. And the other part was the ability to spend money on free agents. That is no longer an option.
Right, they stopped.
Right, so the money is out, so that part's gone. Ochiai is gone with his ability to spot talent. And, you know, basically they're left. So blaming the Dominican part on the equation, you know, is sort of like blaming the bank teller, you know, for the bank going bust.
Yeah, obviously, I don't think Wayne meant it that way. I just think he said that they're limiting the pool. They're limiting the talent pool from which they're feeding.
And I think they're cheap. I think they're being cheap. I think they're basically decided they've done a cost cutting measure in the sense that that's where they're going to get because of the value. I mean, to be honest, the last time they had a very successful player who was he's Latin but he's from. He's from Florida, and that is Alex Ochoa. So it was it's been a long road since that happened, and that was actually a pre-Ochiai acquisition. So
right.
I don't see that. I think the Dragons right now they lack a vision, which is kind of a typical for the Dragons. They're not Machiavellian to the extent that Oryx is, but they've never really had much of a vision, which explains why, you know, they could fire Ochiai because he wasn't fan friendly, you know, and then say he was one of the better managers the Dragons have ever had.
Right, when he was hands down the best manager that the team ever saw.
Yeah, it's like calling George Washington one of the first American presidents. You know, he is one of those guys. He's in that group, you know, all those other guys who were there.
So, well, I told my line to MPB Reddit was, you can't fire the pitching coach that won't turn jokers into aces. And in this case, you fire the manager that won't change bums into stars. And I'm not saying that the Chunichi Dragons are bums, but they're not. They're certainly not championship level. And, you know, if you're going to get a manager with some experience and a guy with a plan, I understand it. But if you're just firing the guy out of spite, then it doesn't make sense. And I think I'm picking him to finish last next year, too.
Wow.
Already.
Get a head start.
You got a head start.
So you're taking a Dragon's option. You're taking the Lion's option. I can pick them last now and save work later.
Exactly. All right, a few notes before we wrap it up, and we'll talk about something a little positive. There were a couple of shutouts this past week, and I thought they were certainly needed to be recognized. One was by Yuki Karakawa of the Lotte Marines, mm-hmm. and the other was by Shinsaburo Tawata. I just love saying his name; it's so stately. Of Seibu, and they fired shutouts, both of them, on Thursday. Now, I think I sent the question to you: which was more unlikely?
I'd have to say Tawata, because only from the standpoint of Karakawa's, basically, guy's got good stuff, who's been sort of lost in the wilderness for a couple of years. But he's been there before.
I figured you'd go that direction, but I didn't think it would be for that reason.
Oh, okay. But Tawata, I really haven't seen enough of him to think that, you know, but a shutout is, you know, in, if you don't see the shutout, it's hard to rate him. And I would add the other one, speaking of Tawata, we had another rookie throw a shutout on Saturday, his first career shutout. Hirotoshi Takanashi of the Nippon Ham Fighters is one of those second-year rookies. So he pitched briefly last year, made one start, and then they stuck him in the bullpen, and they went, wow, this guy's good in the bullpen. Let's make him a starter again, which
right.
which is often not a which is, you know, in itself is not a plan, but in this case, it sounds like they actually had a plan. They took a guy who could be a starter, and he's been... You know, they just put him out there, and he went like. And they're probably thinking, "What took us so long to figure out this guy could be a starter?"
Right, right. Well, getting back to my original question.
Okay. Sorry, I hijacked it, but that's my job. It's actually in my job description on the podcast. Hijack John. It says, "Hi, John will make plans, and Jim will hijack them." And if you doubt that, I'll post that on the Facebook page.
Stop! You're hijacking it again. I have to rewrite those rules then. Or expectations.
If you do that, you got to pay me more.
Okay, you're right. I'm going to go with Karakawa because we've seen the pitching stylings of Yuki Karakawa for a few years now, and there was really no reasonable expectation of him throwing a shutout. He hadn't done so since June 28th of 2011. And here's Tawata in his 12th career start, and I think he's a guy coming out of college, and he has, you know, he was highly touted in the preseason, and I heard a lot of good things about him. And then I saw him throw, and he's got this delivery that, you know, he's really low to the ground by the time he releases the ball, and has a lot of stress on all kinds of parts of his body. And it scares me when I look at him pitch. But he had pitched 8 innings back in June, mm-hmm. but that was his longest stint, and that was 107 pitches. And he'd thrown a lot more pitches and a lot fewer innings in some of his other starts. And here he goes for 121 pitches and closes it out with a 3-hitter.
Wow.
And a guy with an ERA, he lowered it to 4.87 with that shutout, with a 9-innings shutout. So, I mean, it was 5.71 before that. So, I mean, this is that for me, it was Tawata, but Karakawa, but I think Tawata was very surprising. I think it's a really good question that, you know, maybe deserves a lot more debate, but it's a close race for sure.
Okay. Karakawa has a body of work. Tawata's had a couple of good games. He's had a lot of poor ones. So, yeah. Okay. So, Karakawa. Okay.
All right. And then the last note is Tetsuto Yamada, the Swallows 40-40 man. I'm going to call him. I think he's on pace. He could have gotten it, but he was plunked in the back on July 30th by mm-hmm. Seiji Tahara of the Giants, and he ended up being deactivated this past week with a bruised rib or mm-hmm. bone bruise
on the 8th rib, the left side of his body. So
we don't know when he's coming back, and I didn't think Swallows were going to come back and make it to a playoff spot, but of course they've been playing really well without him. They won the series in Nagoya. They have won 2 out of 3 against the Giants. So, and this kid, Yachi Yachty at second base is really good defensively, and they've just been rolling right along.
Well, the Swallows have a good organization. They have an organization which has a plan to some degree in terms of what they do with the minor. They're one of the teams that's fairly progressive about dealing with their minor league talent, along with the Hawks and the Bay Stars now, and used to be with the Lions, to some degree the Giants now, where basically if a guy does well on the farm team, then he's suddenly on the radar and he's suddenly part of the conversation, and how can he get better and how can we use him, as opposed to, well, don't let him get a big head on the farm, because he's going to be there a while. Doesn't he know he's in prison?
My goodness.
We need to give him an attitude adjustment. He thinks he's going somewhere. We got to teach him a lesson.
Well, this kid Naomichi Nishiura, who,
yep,
I think he gained a lot of fame because he hit a home run in his, I think it was a grand slam, right?
Mm-hmm.
In his first major league, his first top team at bat, and got a start on opening day, I think. And then he has basically been in the minors, and they brought him up,
mm-hmm,
and he's been producing at a really good clip for them. So. Especially recently, so
right,
yeah, really interesting. Again, I don't know that the Swallows can make it up into a playoff spot, but they have been looking good, and I hope Tetsuto comes back soon, and I want to see 40-40 from him, and just hoping.
Yeah, well, that might be hard with a bruised rib. That's, the stolen bases can take their toll. I've 40-40 is a gimmick. To me, that's like talking about cycles.
Whatever.
Give me 40-28. I'm happy. Don't
just
push.
Get your own bucket of rain and just dump it on any parade you see.
No,
all right?
No. I'm glad if he gets it, but I could care less, to be honest. I'm glad he gets it.
If he gets it, I couldn't care less. Okay, all right.
You know what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, it's a gimmick. Just talking about it is a gimmick. If he gets it as a part of the competition, then it's pretty special. If it's saying this is something, if it's a goal, then it's smoke. It's just blowing smoke. It's got nothing to do
okay,
with it.
Okay, all right. But for us baseball fans who like to see these guys who can have the power to hit 40 home runs and the speed to steal 40 bases.
Well, he has it.
Let's see it. Actually see it unfold on the field.
Yeah.
Let us enjoy it,
yeah,
for goodness
sake.
Yeah,
I do enjoy it. But again, as a goal, it's ridiculous.
Okay, so yeah, I do enjoy it. It's ridiculous. Okay, and with that, we will talk to you next week. If you want to send an email, no questions this week. If you want to send a question by email, it's yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat, at JBW Podcast, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment, question, or anything you want there. Look for us on iTunes. Thank you very much for sticking out the bad sound from last week, and hopefully this was better, and we will talk to you next week.
Okay.
Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for listening.